Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's get to it. Bears this weekend, man. It's going to be fun. Sunday Night Football. Caleb Williams yet to have a good game. Now he's only played one game in the NFL, but it was not a good game. 14 of 29 for just 93 yards. Here's D'Amico Ryans. The first look through the eyes of D'Amico Ryans at the Bears offense and Caleb Williams.
Bears, what I see offensively is starting with the quarterback with Caleb, really, you know, exciting player to watch. Strong arm, like the guy can move around the pocket, scramble in a throw. Like he's, you have to stay on your coverage, right? Because he's going to find someone downfield. So it's, we have to be on the details there when it comes to him moving around in the pocket and just their running game. I think that's where everything starts. They do a good job of their zone scheme, right? Getting Swift going on the outside. We have to do a great job in the run game. And then they have playmakers on the outside. Keenan Allen, all right, DJ Moore, 2 big-time playmakers who've done it for a while in this league. Guys, we have to be aware of where they are in all situations, and we have to make sure we're as sticky as possible in coverage versus them.
All right, so Caleb Williams is one of the biggest names to come into the league in the last few years. He has the generational tag attached to him coming into the league. Obviously, it's a work in progress with him. You have gone back and watched the entirety of his, well, you've watched the entirety of his NFL career.
I've watched his entire career. Yeah. I've been following this kid for a while. I can speak with great authority on every little detail of it. I went back I tried to, you know, go in objectively and not think about the stat line and everything. I would say, before I point out how many bullet points do I have, the 7 negatives about his performance, he did do some good stuff in the game. I think that the stat line doesn't tell the whole story. They put together some drives. It doesn't tell the whole story just looking at his stat line. It wasn't an abysmal mess with nothing to hang your hat on. But it was, short of throwing 3 pick sixes or something, it was about as discouraging a performance as you could get. And a lot of the negatives from his scouting report showed up. That's where, when it comes to, all right, yeah, he's able to extend the play, but is that always a good thing? It wasn't when he tried to extend the play on a screen and he took a sack by 578-pound DeFondre Sweat for 17 yards on a screen, because this is what happens on a screen. Everybody, like, you either throw the screen or you don't. There's no other option, because the offensive linemen, by the time you scramble or something, they're all downfield. He's scrambling around for God knows what reason and ends up making the sack 10 yards further than it needs to be.
Yeah.
Part of that, though, too, is you can make a partial excuse because his interior offensive line just looked disgustingly bad. Like, you're a bad offensive lineman when you get beat on a screen, because, like, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get beat on a screen. But they got beat so badly,
so bad,
that the DeVondre Sweat was able to get a sack on it. So that part of it, I think, unnecessarily trying to extend plays. A throw he tried to make as he was running out of bounds, it was really, really ill-advised. And it could have been a pick, but it was on 3rd and long, so it wouldn't have been disastrous necessarily. There's some of those gunslinger tendencies that he really needs to learn to curb, and I don't know if he learns that lesson between week 1 and week 2, but there's opportunity for mayhem with some of his poor decision making.
Okay, so the big talk with the Bears coming into this season, in addition to Caleb Williams, was how good a job Ryan Poles had done in putting weapons around him.
Yeah.
You know, they went and did kind of a version of what I think the Texans have been doing with C.J. Stroud this offseason. They drafted Rome Odunze with the other first-round pick that they had, the 9th pick overall, or 8th, whatever it was, 9th pick overall, I think. They already had D.J. Moore in the building from the Bryce Young trade, and he was great last year. And then they went and traded for Keenan Allen. You know, Keenan Allen is sort of the Stephon Diggs in this whole thing here. 2 of those 3 guys might not play in the game. They didn't practice. But what did that? I mean, 93 yards passing, so there's not a whole lot to go off of here. So I'm guessing that the synchronicity of this group was not all that good.
No, and I think that's the key for the Texans. And I think the Texans' defensive backfield, or the Texans' defense in general, has filmed the watch last week where they can say, all right, listen, we've got to clean up these coverage issues, because Caleb Williams had guys wide open downfield, and he airmailed balls. Like he was, or excuse me, not Caleb, Caleb Williams had guys wide open downfield, and he airmailed it. Just wildly poor accuracy throwing the ball downfield. I don't think Caleb Williams is going to remain that way. I think he probably, even though he claims he never gets nervous and everything, I think he was just, he had some rookie jitters. And so there were opportunities for big chunk plays by the Bears. Caleb Williams just couldn't capitalize on it. The thing that I wonder about is, okay, yes, they've got all these receivers. Let's say if Roma Dunze is healthy, so be it. They stuck him. I don't know what Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, was really thinking in terms of helping out a rookie quarterback, because they had him in gun the vast majority of the day, and they weren't really running RPOs or play action or anything to fool the defense or to help the rookie quarterback out. They've just got him standing back there like he's Tom Brady or something, trying to carve up defenses. You know, the Titans can threaten defensively.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know what they were doing. It didn't look anyone. And this is the funny thing, Sean. Like, okay, Caleb Williams is more comfortable in the gun, and it's going to take some time for him to get under center because he didn't do hardly any of it in college.
Yeah.
He couldn't handle the snap. He was bobbling the snap all day long.
That had to be jitters. That had to be jitters.
I was trying to be too objective, I think. Yeah, they weren't bad snaps. Right. Like, he's just bobbling the snap. I think the guy that... It's kind of like the guy that talks big before a fight. You're like, all right, the guy that's talking the most is usually the one who's most nervous. I think Caleb Williams claiming that he never gets nervous might be an indication that he was peeing down his leg
entire
game.
Thou doth protest too much, man. And look, this is... And we'll hear from CJ later in the show about this, but... You know, the decibel level in the stadium needs to be loud and be there early. Get there early, you know?
I was wondering, okay, how much will Caleb Williams be affected by crowd noise and everything if he's this guy who never gets nervous? I watched that game and I thought, man, the crowd can do big things in this game.
Yeah.
That was in the friendly confines of Soldier Field, and this is not going to be that.
Yeah.
So if you want to give yourself a game ball after this game because Caleb Williams ends up bobbling snaps and everything else again, then go for it.
That'd be fun if the Texans had tiny little game balls, and if Caleb Williams, say, botches like three or four snaps on your way out of the stadium, you get handed, you know, they
you
have
get
like
a free
the
mini game ball.
You get a mini game ball. Yeah. Like if Caleb Williams fumbles a few times or something like that.
Now, so I think Shane Waldron must have been thinking, hey, we've got all these stud wide receivers. Yeah, we'll just run around all over the place. It'll be no big deal. It didn't work out that way. They were on the wrong page. They were on different pages than the quarterback multiple times. I think at least once it was probably Roma Dunze's fault, did kind of a rookie thing, drifting away from his spot. And it's kind of like we saw with Anthony Richardson on his pick six in the preseason, where guys are doing things. It was actually a good throw, but then other times where I think he didn't quite know where Keenan Allen was going to be, I would put that on the quarterback typically. And it seemed like they were trying to force the ball to Keenan Allen at times, kind of using him like Robert Woods was used last year with C.J. Stroud. Caleb's just not as accurate as C.J. Stroud.
He's not. Nobody is. Yeah, it's... I'm glad they won last week, the Bears. I'm glad they beat the Titans. That helps the Texans. They needed a blocked punt for a touchdown and just an awful Will Levis pick six. But that they're coming in here 1-0, I think maybe increases the focus a little bit. You know, like if they had lost to the Titans, you know, 17-7 or something like that, then maybe you're feeling a little too comfortable. But that they won the game shows that there are some elements on this team that you probably need to be concerned about.
There is, I think if you're the Texans offense, and I would say this is the same for the Texans defense, and CJ alluded to this And you know that look, they learned some good lessons. You know, like yeah, they got the win, and it's nice to get the win, but they learned some really good lessons. I'm gonna play some audio for you, Sean,
okay.
Because the Bears defense obviously last week made Will Levis look like the worst starting quarterback. They made Will Levis Will Levis did some good things, but he looked as bad as Caleb Williams in some regards.
Yeah,
the Bears defense I think has the ability to play a more of a clean, traditional game where they don't have to play soft coverages and just concede the run somewhat because they've got a pretty good slate of defensive backs.
Yeah.
And this was, I want you to guess the announcer. You'll probably recognize it by the voice, but really it's the line and the way it's delivered. And then as soon as I was watching the TV copy, I was like, oh, I know who this is. This is the color commentator from last week's Bears game talking about how hard it is to throw against that secondary.
Trying to throw the ball against this back end is like throwing into a bouquet of Venus flytraps, Adam.
Three words in, I'm like, Mark Sanchez.
Yeah. I want Mark Sanchez to succeed because, honestly, I love that analogy.
Dude, Ben.
I think that's great imagery. But he just, it's so obviously written down in front of him. Like, he's fumbling for his notes to remember the punchline.
I was hyper-focused on the voice, so I was only, like 70% focused on the analogy. Can you play it one more time, Ben?
Trying to throw the ball against this back end is like throwing into a bouquet of Venus flytraps, Adam.
It sounded like someone handed it to him, and he's like, a bouquet of, Venus flytraps. What the hell's a Venus flytrap?
He might not actually even know what a Venus flytrap was. It used to be big in the cartoons back in our day. So I think we probably have a better understanding of Venus flytraps than Mark Sanchez does. I think that, man, and I say this, listen, this comes from a place of zero jealousy because I do not like doing color commentary. Mm-hmm. That's never been anything I've aspired to. I've done it before, and I'm kind of like, it's not for me. I get too stressed out about being wrong and everything. So I do need to work with him. I need to I feel like somebody is feeding him these lines, but
dude,
I don't think he's got I don't think he can quite pull it off, and he's just a little bit of rehearsal beforehand or something. Because he's not going to come up with it on his own in the moment. So, like, if you're going to read a canned line, just you gotta pull it off. He's got really, I love that analogy.
Yeah,
in the moment, I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
You're the analogy master. I concede that.
Yeah.
Like, you are the analogy master. I fear that if you were to work with Sanchez and use your playbook, that he might wind up with some analogies that get him fired within the first
two
games.
I'd be like a speechwriter for a bad politician.
Right?
I'd be like, this son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I'd send him out there, so I'd start like intentionally sabotaging him.
That's exactly
him. I'd start doing it.
It's like when your wife, like, uh-oh, here we go.
It's like that time my wife told me that I wasn't hung well enough.
It's like Sanchez. Oh man, that's
so
good.
But all things aside, I think that the Bears defense is more capable of, I don't know if I wouldn't call it a clean game, but calling a more conventional call sheet where they can get some rush, they can cover, and the cool thing about that is that there might be more potential for fireworks offensively.
Mm-hmm.
It's that battle. You've got three really good top wide receivers versus a team that maybe feels like they can just match up to you better.
Yeah.
That there's opportunities to win the one-on-one.
That's fun, man. That's really fun.
The other thing, too, to go back to how good Joe Mixon and the other running backs, too, were in pass protection,
mm-hmm.
I think that I'm watching in watching Caleb Williams and then watching C.J. Stroud back-to-back yesterday, the Texans were able to do some things with their pass protection. They're a little bit unconventional. Like, that's why I talked to my old teammate Drew Hodgson about it, offensive lineman. They're very comfortable with allowing the running back at times to block the defensive end. Even on inside, usually if the running back's in pass protection and blocking a defensive end, it's because it's the edge player.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to, you know, buy a little extra time. There were times where both Dare and Joe Mixon were blocking defensive linemen, and it wasn't perfect. And you don't expect them to be 100% on those, But because CJ can operate from a compressed pocket so well, they can get away with it. Because CJ threw some dimes with a defensive end pushing a running back into his lap. And, like, whereas with Caleb, I wouldn't expect him to be at that level yet of C.J. Stroud, but you can't do that stuff with Caleb. And Caleb was very flustered with getting any kind of pressure up the middle. And that Bears offensive line interior looked atrocious. I think that there's a real opportunity there for some of the stuff the Texans were doing versus the Colts, where the defensive ends were coming inside, that it'll yield more sacks this week. I think they could end up getting him down on the ground a lot.
They had two sacks in the Colts game, and they were both from interior defensive linemen, Mario Edwards and Foley Fatakasi. But they got the sacks, but on those plays, it was either Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson, or both that were wreaking havoc, you know,
coming inside or just compressing the pocket.
Will's getting double teams, that kind of stuff.
There's some hack account on Twitter right now that's got Texans fans all up in arms because he said, "See, Will Anderson, zero sacks. I told you he's no better than a second round
pick."
Don't respond to that dude.
No.
Like that's no. He claims he's a former scout or something. Like no actual person would ever point to a single game and say, "Yep, see, zero sacks." Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson did a good job of, I think, in a game where they were supposed to try to be really disciplined to try to contain an athletic quarterback, they did a good job of compressing the pocket and were effective despite not having sacks in the game.
The Twitter account you're talking about, I forget the name of it. I don't think I'd say it anyway. It's just it's a former Jets scout. So there's an easy comeback to it. You know what I mean? That stands to reason.
I thought it was a joke, but I'm guessing the guy must have been like an intern or something in the scouting department.
No, it's the Jets. Yeah. They've sucked forever. He could very well have been a scout for the Jets.
That's your calling card? Like, how do you not have the self-awareness to put on the bio, at least former NFL scout? You don't put on former Jets scout.
Jets scout. Yeah, just say NFL scout, man. Who wants to associate themselves with the Jets? C.J. Stroud, he did some media yesterday. He was really good, as always. He got asked a lot of questions about his new friends, like Joe Mixon, new friend of C.J. Stroud. Hey, C.J., well, talk about the first time that you talked to Joe Mixon.
Yeah, it's somebody, when we played him last year, we knew that one of our keys to victory against Cincinnati was, like, stop 28, and I definitely do think, like, I see why we had that game plan in, just because not only is he a great back and he runs hard, but he makes our line right a lot and, you know, runs off their blocks, sets blocks up. And we just had a conversation when he knew that he was coming here, that we were just excited to work with one another, being two Cali dudes, you know. And honestly, I mean, we just knew that we were trying to go win a lot, you know, and that's something that he was used to, was winning in Cincinnati. So he brought that winning fashion in. He knows what it takes to get all the way to the big one.
Immediately when he talked about making the O-line right, I thought of a couple plays where there was penetration deep in the backfield. And yet, because, and this is a difference this year too, because one guy might be getting beat, but four other guys are doing the right thing, Mixon's able to redirect and cut back so quickly that it ends up being a 12-yard gain, where it very easily could have been, if you stutter step at all behind that, at the spot of penetration, that gives just enough time for the other defenders to rally. And Mixon, because he hits it so hard, he ended up turning him into really positive plays. But when CJ also talked in that press conference about some of the rusty things, like the opportunities they had that they just got to clean up, oh my gosh. The screen, and you remember this from the TV copy, Sean, where Joe Mixon kind of hesitated behind Shaq Mason.
Yeah.
Because Shaq Mason was just, he froze.
Yeah.
Instead of just going out and getting after the defender out there, and even if you whiff, it allows Joe Mixon to make a decision, he kind of froze and stood in front of the defender. And if he had just gone after the guy, Mixon would have hit it straight up the field and it would have been 20-plus yards.
Yeah.
They had it set up so perfectly. Those little things and those little miscues, you know, Shaq Mason had a really bad snap on a defensive tackle twist that he didn't pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Those little things that they got to clean up, it could have been much better offensively than it was if they can just clean up some of those little errors of guys that don't typically make those errors.
Right, right. Well, we'll hear from CJ on that later in the show. He hit that like three or four times. He said shooting ourselves in the foot as part of the answer to at least three questions yesterday.
Yeah.
Like they clearly went back and looked at CJ went back and watched it and thought, man, like he probably thought I could have had 350. You know, if we did it, you know, if some of that's on him. He even said like the deep shot to Tank in the end zone. CJ hits that 9 out of 10 times. You know, yeah. Instead
well,
of getting knocked away.
I'll credit Gus Bradley, the defensive coordinator for the Colts. They did, as they typically do, they do a really good job of not necessarily blitzing often, but when they do blitz, they're very effective with it. And the offensive tackles in the first half didn't always respond to it that well, and they adjusted as the game went on. But there was a lot of sloppiness in the blitz pickup. And, you know, Laremy Tunsil had a really bad snap versus Leatu Latu on a blitz that wasn't I tried to make an excuse for him based on the blitz, but it was just Laremy Tunsil getting beat.
Yeah.
I think in a bad way. In a way that he doesn't typically get beat in pass protection. So cleaning up some of that stuff and getting the rust out, I hope continues over the next couple weeks.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
A couple people pointing out, and I saw this on social media as well yesterday, there's a video of Joe Mixon. I don't know if you saw it, Seth. I don't know who sprung for it, but they got him a gigantic H chain, like a chain with a medallion. With new font, with all kinds of diamonds on it and everything.
Yeah.
The texter's asking, does he get to keep that or is it just his for the week? That would be a cool tradition if a player gets player of the week, that they get one of those.
Yeah. They should make him wear it in the game, too. That way it kind of handicaps it for the other guys. He has to lug around an 8-pound piece of jewelry under his pants. Other guys have a chance to make plays because Joe Mixon's weighted down a little bit.
He's weighted down. Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, here's C.J. Stroud talking about his new friends. That was Mixon. Here's C.J. on connecting with Stephon Diggs.
I would say just a lot of work away from the spotlight. You know, him coming out of L.A., me going to Paris to see him and throw out there. Just really all the times where nobody sees. So that's where, like, that work, you see it pay off. But I think that was just a little scratch on the surface. There's a ton of plays we left on that field that game, and you know, I think we'll be a lot better going forward.
That's one of those cuts right there. If I'm like an old school guy, like I'm guessing we have some old Oilers that listen to the show that live in town here, and they're like, yeah, you know, Joe flew out to L.A. and we threw the ball around, and then I met him over in Paris, and we threw the ball around over there, and
yeah, not Paris Island.
No, or it Paris, wasn't like Texas. They didn't go.
Yeah. No, listen, guys, it's cool. They're there for Fashion Week, old school guys, so...
Now you understand?
They were. That's not a joke. They were there for Fashion Week, but they got a workout in.
They did.
Got to be tough to find a field where they can, you know, practice their precise route running when it's marked out in meters or something, yeah.
Oh, can you imagine? They're totally off for the first 2 weeks of the season because of the metric system.
Sorry, guys, we had to convert, yeah. Calculations are funky.
DJ Bienname had a really good story about CJ yesterday on ESPN.com. It's a long-form story. And they had some cool anecdotes in there. But one of them was that in typical CJ stuff, like when they traded for Mixon and Diggs, CJ had them both over to his house to watch film and teach him the offense. You know, it's just completely with Nico, he sent Nico Julio Jones YouTube clips to watch during the offseason because that's who, you know, physically, that's a great receiver that Nico most looks like. You know what I mean? Like, stylistically, they were very similar and had success in this offense, right? When Julio Jones was at his peak, was, you know, Kyle Shanahan's running that Atlanta offense there.
Yeah. Nico has talked about that a little bit and talking about some of the bigger guys, but that are able to run routes way better than most big guys too. And we've seen that where Nico this year in training camp alone, it's the deep ball stuff and, you know, some of the stuff over the middle where he's just big and running full speed when he catches the ball and breaks tackles. That's all what you expect out of him. But some of the stop the stops and things like that. Like, it looks like he's a smaller guy, yeah, just sitting down in a chair and turning around and putting the brakes on in a way that Andre Johnson used to be able to do.
Andre's
just really
one, yeah,
just offsetting the threat of his deep speed with some of the shorter stuff. That part's really cool.
Yeah. Nico's really good. In fact, CJ talked about Nico. He was asked yesterday, is Nico just scratching the surface right now?
Yeah, for sure. I think he's also in his prime as well. Like, you can see just the pressure he puts on defense, how big, how strong he is, how good he is in the run game, run blocking, how fast he is, how he knows how to run every route in the route tree. Like, Nico Collins has no flaws in his game. And he's a great teammate. He loves his teammates, and he's just somebody I love to work with every day. And, you know, I'm really proud of him. I tell him that all the time. And every dollar that we're paying him, he deserves every single cent. So I'm very excited to be a part of his career and to see what he's going to do in the future.
Yeah, man. He might be a bargain at $24 million.
You know, in the first clip that we played where CJ was talking about the time spent in the offseason, I was on Chicago radio yesterday, and, you know, Sean, I don't do a good job of going on there and playing the heel necessarily. Maybe I'm too polite, but a couple times they wanted me to compare CJ Stroud to Caleb Williams, and they referenced that, you know, they'd had Kurt Warner on earlier, and Kurt was talking about just how advanced CJ is in terms of, look, they're not at a stage where they're trying to teach him to be a progression passer. Mm-hmm. It's that he skips steps in the progression based on what he's seeing pre-snap and then how the defense adjusts and rotates afterwards. And I was, you know, they were trying to basically be like, well, when can Caleb get to the point where CJ is? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, most young quarterbacks don't. Like, most of them, you're hoping that by year four, when it's time to give them their extension, that they are where CJ is right now. And part of it is, it's not just understanding how to read the defenses. It's working with the receivers and the tight ends to where you trust that they're reading the defense the same way you are. So what we see so many times that we almost take it for granted at this point is that when CJ might have a three-man route combo to the left side of the field, and it's not there, and he's turning, and he's starting his throwing motion before he's even confirmed that Dalton Schultz is where he thinks Dalton Schultz is going to be.
Yeah.
And that's the part, I think, that's the part that blows away so many former NFL quarterbacks when they break down C.J. Stroud's film, is that the throwing motion is starting before he sees anything or before the receiver is even out of his break yet, whereas so many other young quarterbacks want to see it, confirm it, and then throw the ball.
Yeah.
And some guys never get past. Jay Cutler never got past that stage. He was a see it and throw it guy. And I just don't think that that's going to come anytime soon for Caleb Williams. I don't think Caleb Williams is going to be that kind of anticipation thrower yet. He's going to be a guy that wants to scramble around and wait to see that a guy is open before he throws it. Because even in that game last week with Caleb Williams, there were times where the first read, like, it should have been out of his hand, but he's deciding to throw deep instead, and then overthrowing the deep ball.
Yep.
And it's just, it wasn't always necessarily the right decision. He's not anywhere close to CJ. He's just flat out not anywhere close.
Text message, Caleb Williams will get, all caps, destroyed this Sunday. I'm betting he won't finish the game. Look, the interior of that offensive line for the Bears, he's going to get hit. We know that. I don't want to bet on somebody getting injured and dragged out of the game.
Well, no, I think he might. I think that guy might be thinking that they just yank him for his own mental safety. Mental health awareness moment. They're going to give him a. Remember, Peyton said that about why he doesn't think his rookie interception record will ever be broken, because these days there aren't that many Jim Morris seniors that are just going to let him sit out there and die when he's struggling. It's like most coaches at some point are going to try to show a little mercy.
Yeah, he had like 28 interceptions. You almost have to try to get 28 interceptions nowadays with the style of game that's played. You know what I mean? Like, teams they're just so much more conscious of it.
Jim Morris Sr. was a coach who seemed to hate his own players at times.
Yeah.
Like, he just hated his own
playoffs.
Players.
Yeah. Someone's saying the medallion that Joe Mixon got also said player of the week in gold on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I didn't zoom in on anything. Okay, so that is the player of the week medallion. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Caleb, I hope they explained it to him beforehand that it was like, hey, this is for the you get this for a week, okay?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you don't get to keep this $20,000 medallion. I don't know how much it costs. Caleb will be Bryce 2.0. Nah, I don't know about that. I'd buy stock in Caleb Williams. I would sell my stock in Bryce Young.
He's way more physically gifted than Bryce Young.
Yeah. My suggestion.
I don't know. I'm not 100% convinced that Bryce Young. Who knows where he would have gone in the draft if the Panthers hadn't been so enamored of the S2 cognition test and everything else that goes into it. I think a lot of NFL personnel people were freaked out about his size when they met him in person.
So you think if the Carolina Panthers drafted C.J. Stroud first?
Yeah.
You don't think the Texans would have...
I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
Like, I think there were way more... There were way more reservations by a lot of NFL people that might have been impressed by him in a lot of ways. But for a guy who's as small as he is but doesn't have extreme athleticism, I think that would have scared off even a lot of coaches who might be open to the idea of taking an atypical quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
They at least like, okay, yeah, but can I see some Kyler Murray style? Can I see a Kyler Murray style athlete? And Bryce Young's nowhere near that. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of former GMs and people that hadn't met Bryce Young in person that were bullish on Bryce Young. I'm not convinced that the entire league felt unanimously that he was as good a prospect.
Bryce Young has ruined it for any quarterbacks that are under 6 feet. Kids out there, I know that, you know, oftentimes you have people saying, chase your dreams.
Yeah.
You can do anything you want to if you put your mind to it. Don't let people tell you, you know, don't let the haters get you down. Whatever it is, I'm telling you right now, if you're under 6 feet and you're a quarterback, you got no chance of going high in the NFL draft ever again. And it's because of Bryce Young. Because of Bryce Young and his big backpack that he walks around with that makes him look like he's 5'2".
What's up, guys? How we doing? Everyone good?
It's Bryce Young. You're not good at football. It's Bryce Young. This is what I would tell Bryce Young. If Bryce Young could make one change to his game, this is what I would tell him. Stop wearing sleeveless t-shirts to your post-game press conference, especially after you lose 47-10 and throw two picks in a game. You look like you're 13 and you're going to the arcade.
I don't think...
Put on a golf shirt or a button-down or something.
I mean, there have been, like, Russell Wilson's 5'11", Drew Brees is 6 foot. I think that guys his size and his athleticism level aren't going to get drafted number one overall. I've said this before. I don't know if Drew Brees, even after Drew Brees had his career, I don't know how high he'd get drafted in the modern NFL because people are still going to be looking at it like, man, it's really hard to judge whether somebody has the timing, anticipation, and first and foremost, the work ethic, like to overcome all those things. That it's not as simple as saying, like, well, Drew Brees did it, so this guy can do it, and we'll draft him number one overall. I think Bryce Young confirmed a lot of people's suspicions about, like, all right, yeah, like, you can have drawbacks, but you got to offset it with something. We can't just feel like you're the slam dunk number one overall guy.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's any that are coming up through the ranks right now either. And Bryce is a real outlier size-wise, because not only is he short, but he's skinny. You know, like, Kyler is at least sub-6 foot, but he's, you know, tightly packed. You know what I'm saying? Like, Baker Mayfield has a little bit of bulk to him. You know, Drew Brees was just off the charts accurate. And Drew Brees is a second round pick, you know.
And Brees is probably, I think he's a bit of, he's not as small as Bryce Young.
No.
He's a little bit of, and he had, changes his throwing motion to get as tall as possible. Drew Brees has an attention to detail that Bryce Young has never exhibited. That's where I got offended by Bryce Young watching him last year. And that, like, dude, you're small and you have horrible mechanics. Like, where do you get off?
Yeah.
Like, you don't have the athleticism to run away from trouble, and you've got sloppy footwork as a short man. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? He's lazy.
Damn it, Sean. I'm 5'2", and now I'm depressed, and I wasn't even thinking of being a quarterback. I'm not saying you can't be something else. I'm just saying you won't be picked high in the NFL. If you're listening to this show, you're obviously a very intelligent person, and there's myriad of other things that you can do out there.
So. Yeah, no, and let's see. Oh, Mike Vick he's 6 foot flat.
I think he's 6 foot even, yeah.
But again, an extreme athleticism and arm strength that compensated for some of the height.
Yeah, Bryce,
you just got to offset it with something.
Right. I just think GMs are going to be scared for a few years, like, to take guys that size that high, you know?
Yeah.
We'll see. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's give away some tickets. Yeah. We've got tickets to the Cougs and the Owls on Saturday. 7 o'clock start, TDECU Stadium. Should be a beautiful night out there. 713-572-4610. Caller number 5 wins a 4-pack to see the Bayou Bucket game. Cougs and the Owls. One more chance to win tomorrow in the 7 o'clock hour. So if you miss out this time, keep it tuned right here to Sports Radio 610. And you got a chance to win again tomorrow. Should be a fun night out at TDECU Stadium. CJ Stroud has two requests for the Texans fan base, and I don't think these are unreasonable. I think you should accommodate our quarterback. Two requests for Sunday. We'll let CJ have his day here coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast, my God.
Come on, Sean.
Good to be with you. I know, get it together, dude.
You've gotten the day of the week right multiple times this morning.
I'm on a streak right now.
Simple.
You need to get me a gigantic H logo chain for getting the day of the week right so many times. I think I got it right all week this week.
Here's your chain.
No, thanks. Go. Yeah, appreciate that. The ding.
That's what we do on this show.
I know. I like that, actually. I'm okay with that. I mean, I can't go sell it at a pawn shop or anything, but...
I mean, you could. The return you might get is going to be disappointing.
Significantly less, yes. CJ Stroud met with the media yesterday. He had two requests for you, Texan fans. That's it. He's asking you to do two simple things. Here was C.J. Stroud on the energy in NRG Stadium on Sunday.
I'm always going to be myself. I really don't get into the hoopla and away crowd, home crowd. I really don't mind. I just try to execute, do my game, do what I need to do at a high level. I love our crowd. You know, they do a good job of bringing juice and energy. I hope since it's a night game, people come a little earlier. maybe because of the Houston traffic, people come a little late. But and then on offense, like, they could be quiet a little more. That would help. Especially when we're going fast, like, it'd be hard for the guys to hear me. So I think we can be a little better with that. But, hey, we love the energy.
Okay, so two things. Get there early, and I agree with him. It's a 7:20 kickoff. Come on now. Get in your seat early. We got to intimidate Caleb Williams and scatter his brain. And number two, when the Texans are on offense, keep the noise down a little bit, especially when they're tempo. If you do those two things, if you show up early and you're quiet when the Texans are on offense, Seth and I – on Monday, we'll give you a collective and another for you.
Yeah.
For all
it's,
of you.
It's the greatest honor we can bestow on
one
you.
Big
it's almost
chain.
Like,
yeah.
It's like knighting you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do 70,000 dings on the air. That's what we're going to do.
Don't get distracted. Keep your eye on the task at hand and worry about the rewards later on. Don't get caught in the fourth quarter. Don't start thinking like, ooh, we're going to get a ding. We're getting a ding. And then meanwhile, the chatter from everybody saying we're going to get a ding in the stadium is too loud for CJ to talk.
Right. Be careful. You got to balance it. It was funny at the end of that cut. You could kind of tell CJ was like, all right, I got to be a little careful here. Like, when I first got here last year, nobody's even showing up until the second quarter, you know, and there's a lot of skepticism around the team, you know.
He's always very polite about it. Like, he wants to say it, but he doesn't want to come off like he's chiding the fan base or something. And I think he does the right thing. He kind of almost apologetically suggests, like, hey, you know, like, just, you know, maybe just be quiet when I'm under center, please.
But there's
especially when I'm in the gun.
Right. But there's very few guys that they've drafted onto this team the last couple of years who probably haven't come in to the atmosphere that they came into originally. I think it's going to be awesome on Sunday. And I thought the playoff game against the Browns was maybe the dawning of a new era, or an old era, actually, when it used to be that way when you were a player, or back when the Kubiak era, when they were making the playoffs, and even at times in the O'Brien era. Like, they draft guys from LSU and Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State. And, like, I think about that a lot when they drafted these guys and they came in, and I'd get there right after you and I get done doing pregame, and the game's ready to kick off, and it's 40% full. And I'm thinking, man, what must these guys be thinking right now?
Yeah, it's a different environment. It's a different feel.
Yeah.
But I think that... I don't know. I mean, that's part of the culture of Houston, is showing up a little bit late,
And I think they learned that after like 4 weeks. I'm just saying the first game when they get in here, it's probably kind of jarring, you know?
Yeah, I think if Osweiler, at any point in Osweiler's tenure here, his long and illustrious tenure, did Osweiler ever say anything like, you know, every crowd is different
in the
National Football League, and this crowd, I'm going to say it right now, this crowd needs to show up earlier, and they need to shut the hell up when I've got the ball in my hands. When you got to give Brock Osweiler a pristine environment to see Brock Osweiler things.
That's right. So that two requests from CJ. Mark it down, people. Being there early on Sunday. Okay, we got one more here we can get in before the top of the hour. Mad Dog Russo lost his mind yesterday. We were talking about the Jets a little earlier in the show. There's some dude out there who says he's a former Jets scout that said, see, Will Anderson, second-round pick, didn't get any sacks in week one. And we're like, yeah, of course this guy's a second-round pick, or of course this guy's a former Jets scout. The Jets suck, and his analysis of Will Anderson sucks. The Jets are bad right now so far this year. They got blown out. They got blown out by the Niners, and I feel like the Niners brought like their B-minus game in that game offensively. You know, like they were Ayuk's dropping passes. They're kicking field goals. They kicked a ton of field goals in that game instead of touchdowns. Mad Dog Russo lost his mind because I guess Aaron Rodgers said something to Jet fans about a bandwagon and staying. Don't jump on the bandwagon. Or jump off the bandwagon when you're a Jets fan. Here was Mad Dog Russo yesterday on First Take.
The Jets defense, can you try? Where is the sense of urgency? This is the Niners on Monday night, ABC, first game of the year. You've done nothing in a season, and all of a sudden you lay an egg like that? And I understand it's the first game. But that was an awful, awful, awful performance. And then I get to listen to Rodgers tell me, well, if you jump off the bandwagon, you're not coming back on. Aaron, you played one game. Go back to Green Bay. You played one game. Whoa. Don't start telling the Jet fan who has been sitting there since Namath. Okay. All right? Richard Todd and Matt Robinson, all these old quarterbacks who stunk. And they sat there and watched nothing. You're going to tell the Jet fan what they should and should not do? Enough already. That was a disgrace.
Okay, can I ask you one question?
And I did bet him.
And I did bet him. That's what she was going to ask. There you go.
That has a little to do with it.
I was saying to myself, like, this anger feels very familiar. Where have I felt this before? Oh, that's right. Every game I've ever lost betting, I want to yell what a disgrace the team is. I didn't see the Aaron Rodgers quote about the bandwagon thing, but it is vintage Aaron Rodgers if he's telling people, you know, about jumping off the bandwagon one game into his Jets career.
It feels almost like didn't Brandon Marshall in his 2 years with the Jets say something that kind of almost like I just remember it would ring true, kind of like Aaron Rodgers' personality and Brandon Marshall's personality, where you could see like maybe a little tone deaf to the trials and tribulations of Jets fans
years. Yeah.
They're like, okay, don't come in here and like take ownership of this franchise and act like you've been through what we've been through.
Right. Yeah. I know your whole journey here to New York has been Broadway shows and fancy dinners and living in a high rise in Manhattan. Meanwhile, we've lived through, you know, we've had to live through Josh McCown as our quarterback for multiple years, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think they have the longest drought without going to the postseason right now, the Jets. It's like over a decade.
It's going to be fascinating to watch Aaron Rodgers. I hope fascinating in a train wreck type of way, since the Texans do play the Jets, this is Aaron Rodgers with limited mobility. Mm-hmm. By his standards. So Aaron Rodgers without the ability to kind of create with his legs or extend plays to the degree that he used to. And also, while having an offensive coordinator who is a sham offensive coordinator, he's there because he's buds with Aaron Rodgers. That's the part that's going to get really ugly in a fascinating way if they can't figure it out. Because it's the whole Jets organization and everything they've done that have gotten them to this spot where it just seems like they can't quite get it right. Having Nathaniel Hackett as their offensive coordinator and with an Aaron Rodgers who might not be physically the same guy, it just feels so Jets.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Jets fans. I know that 29% of our listeners are Jets fans.
Well,
I apologize.
They're on our schedule this year, so that's why the Jets intrigue me. Like they're on the Texans schedule at a part of the season where I think we're really going to start to find out some things. That'll be like that's the first game that I have in a stretch that I think determines this season for the Texans, those three primetime games with the Jets and the Lions and the Cowboys all in prime time. But that's a point in season two for the Jets. I mean, they play, I think, like six of their first 10 games or something are primetime games. Like, they've got a wild schedule. Like, it's almost like the league's like, okay, we know the Jets are going to be a draw, and you can only schedule teams for so many primetime games, so we got to get them all in early in the season before Aaron Rodgers gets hurt.
Yeah, that's what I thought when the schedule came out. Was like, okay, yeah, they're going to smoke them while they got them.
Yes.
They want to get as much ayahuasca in your veins exactly. before you come down, you know?
Yep. All right, let's get to the Astros. Not a good night last night. A lot of, I would say, in-game, but certainly medical news that we've got to get to. How worried are we about this latest Astros injury? We will discuss that coming up next.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.